This is the podcast for August 24th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from inside the mosh pit at the Spastic Tubes concert, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Been quite a week, Blue Gal.
Spastic Tubes! Ow! Oh. They're all spastic, you know. We could make a billion jokes about this. And
we could. We really could.
Let me start by thanking the amazing Joan Walsh for allowing me to interview her about her terrific book.
Oh, you're taking the high road, I see.
I'm taking the high road because she was making jokes about it this week, too, and then was on a panel discussion with a sexual abuse survivor, and all of a sudden it's not funny anymore.
Exactly.
You know? And I think we could sit here and do an hour of jokes as we've done in the past. You know, we were making jokes about guns the week that Gabby Giffords was shot and we had to change gears. And it's just, it's hard sometimes to strike a balance between trying to be lively and fun and realizing that this is a really serious issue.
Well, and the way human beings cope a lot with pain is by humor.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It is not funny that 40 some odd percent of the electorate are crazy idiots. It isn't funny at all. They're wrecking our country. They have been wrecking our country for a very long time. That factually is not funny. But since we can't wish them away, one of the few things we can do, other than voting and getting active and supporting good candidates and all those other good liberal progressive things, is laugh at them because they're so goddamn stupid.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And while we're dishing out thank yous, we have to thank the listener in Australia who found a way to send us cupcakes via the internet. Thank goodness for Google.
Thank goodness for Wonka
and
Vision.
Thank goodness for the listener in Australia who researched cupcake shops in Springfield, Illinois, and found that Mrs. Kitty's Cupcakes, I'm going to put in a plug here, her shop, and, you know, I don't know whether she spells it S-H-O-P or S-H-O-P-P-E, because it's that cupcake store that has peanut butter and jelly cupcakes, banana chocolate cupcakes, strawberry lemon cupcakes, and M&M cupcakes, and just, you know, 40 different varieties of these lovely little confections. And so the girls and I are going after school today to pick 12. And I called Mrs. Kitty, K-I-D-D-Y, and talked to her. And she said, oh, yes, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we have lots. And she should be able to get 12 different varieties in her dozen. So it looks like it'll be a tasting party after school tonight. I don't know what time we'll get them to bed with that much sugar. But we are very familiar with Mrs. Kitty's cupcakes. And middle child was very impressed that whoever sent these, and it was Count Typo in Australia, sent them to us. And thank you. She was very impressed that someone from Australia knew about where to get cupcakes in Illinois. So
thank you
for that.
I was less impressed, not with the generosity, which was awesome.
Oh, that was amazing, yeah.
I didn't realize that this was a wishing machine. And I chastised her for
not sharing that sooner, because you would have said, send us a new minivan.
Yeah, you had one wish and you wished for cupcakes? Really?
Yeah.
Really? What is this, Gilligan's Island and it's French vanilla ice cream? Yeah. No, honey. You wish for
a motorboat and a map.
But thank you very much.
But thank you very much for the cupcakes. That was so sweet.
And speaking of cupcakes...
Dana Loesch, you're not going to call Dana Loesch a cupcake.
No. Really not.
No.
As natural as a transition as that would be if I were a misogynist pig, this whole show is about, well, we've entitled this own show internally as, and a river of misogyny runs through it, because that is the subject of the last week.
Yeah.
You know, we've been joking that the Republican Party is pissed that they're medieval crackpot ideas about science is interfering with them discussing their medieval crackpot ideas about economics.
Exactly.
And that's what they want to talk about jobs, except they don't want to talk about jobs. They want to talk about abortion. Look at every bill they put up in the last 2 years in Congress. Abortion, 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 abortion. The president's an awful person. And this is something that we need to drive home at the block by block level. This is not an aberration of their party. This is their party. This is what they believe. And they believed it for a very, very long time. And how they enact their crazy ideas, sort of the playbook they run, was fascinating to watch as Dana Loesch, who is a nut, who's a right-wing lunatic, who this week...
But she's also a right-wing careerist. And well, so it's really important to her to sort of do the right thing that will help her pursue career success. And so when you went after her on Twitter...
For career success.
For career, for why does ABC This Week have you on their show when your Twitter stream, Dana...
I got a rise out of her.
...is you got a response that was pretty vicious. And... Mm-hmm. Because you were, you know, attacking the gravy train that she depends on, not based on a personal. I don't think you were personally attacking her. You used the word meat sticks, and you used some language.
I was very blunt,
you were saying ABC This Week. Look at Dana Loesch's Twitter stream and tell me why you allow her to represent the conservative side.
Yeah, why do you put her?
What she's saying.
Why are you putting this crazy person on television? Look at what she says. And she came back with something like, heaven forbid that we should have an exchange of ideas. And this ideas are not what you're in the business of marketing. Bigotry, misogyny, incredible lies. That's what you're in the business of. And that it's a free country. It's a free market. You can go on the air and say any crazy ass thing you want on right-wing radio. That's your gig. That's what you do. But when ABC puts you on a quote unquote legitimate serious show and doesn't bother to mention to everyone that you're crazy and doesn't clearly do the basic intern level research of finding out just the awful, terrible things that you say every day, day in, day out, they need to be asked why they do shit like that and don't represent your CV properly. And so watching her freak out over Todd Akin was a brief and fascinating education because she was the last soldier on that hill.
Well, and she's from Missouri. So this is her candidate.
And she's a teabagger from day one. She's a Breitbart offspring. She has all those crazy wingnut credentials. She's on the radio. She's an attractive woman of a certain age, so she gets a lot of literal FaceTime, and she says the worst, most offensive things possible. So Todd Akin was her guy. And watching her shift gears and just burn out the clutch trying to keep up with the story and trying not to admit the truth about the story was fascinating because she's so – she and people like her are so dedicated to this lie, to some particular lie, that they will go as far as they need to go and as deep as they need to go into the crazyville to avoid stating the obvious fact. So first it was, you should ignore this. This is irrelevant. This is trivial. This is nothing. This is just a one-day story. Then it was, well, Bill Clinton was alleged to be a rapist.
Yeah, she switched gears on that one right away.
Yeah. And he's a hero. Well, yeah, and you impeached him. So are you advocating that we impeach Todd Akin? I'm not sure I follow your reasoning here, Dana. So it was, look at all these other terrible things liberals have done. Again, liberals are worse. This is always the foxhole where the scumbags hide.
She's got a bucket of that right next to her microphone, though.
She does. I mean, she does. No matter what happened, no matter how bad.
Paint it on. Yep.
And then it was a media conspiracy. And then it was the GOP, you know, in faraway Washington, the detached GOP was turning on its own and it was ignoring the grassroots, the Koch-funded grassroots teabaggers. Because remember, people, there is no Tea Party. There is no Tea Party. There's the Republican base in funny hats. That's all they are. That's all they ever have been. It's a marketing scam. And if you fall for it, I pity you because it's a bad marketing scam. But the Republican base is once again being rejected by the faraway elites in Washington. And then it was, well, it's his decision. And then it was, then he blew it. Then she finally had to say, I can't support him anymore because he didn't know how to handle the media.
Yeah, it was his, and that's been a lot of what's been going on with Ann Coulter and a lot of people that have been calling for him to step down. It has, as Joan Walsh said in our interview, it has nothing to do with the horribleness of what he said.
No, because, well, and because she breathed, well, he misspoke and he apologized. Yeah. And liberals have said worse things. He didn't misspeak, Dana. He talked out loud in public and said things that you're never supposed to say outside of the Wingnut Clubhouse. But you all believe it. You all believe it. That's why you're crazy.
And I want to bring something up that came to me this morning about this. You and I have been talking about this all week. And you and I have been saying to each other that this is the party that Karl Rove built.
Yeah.
And that he has to just live with it. But I kind of want to veer away from that a little bit because I really think there is
an
exception.
But I have my script right here, honey.
No.
What will I do if you're forcing
if I go off script a little bit?
Oh, my God.
The pro-life wing of the Republican Party, the people who really give money, boots on the ground, you know, dramatically in favor of banning abortion at all costs.
The foot soldiers.
The foot soldiers. And you've written about Little Red State Fundy, you know, as being the little red hen who does all the work and all the fundraising, and the party depends on them. And then when it comes time to actually run things, Karl Rove and Ann Coulter and Mitt Romney and all of these say, well, you know, very good. We're glad you're with us. And then we're going to go off and do our own thing. And what Little Red State Fundy has done, what these far-right anti-abortion forces have done now, and they've done it under the wing of the Tea Party, which, as you say, is a myth. But Todd Akin was their candidate, not the Republican establishment candidate.
Absolutely.
And all of these state legislatures, you know, these the far-right wing pro-life movement has been very angry for about 10 years at Karl Rove.
Yeah.
And quite rightly so. He has ripped them off.
He did.
Taken their money, taken, and they recognize this. I've seen websites that say, you know, we're done playing nice with the Republican Party if they're not going to really deliver on saving babies, period.
And he used to talk about them pretty much the same way I talk about them, behind their back.
Yeah.
You know, okay, here come the crazies. Here come the nut jobs.
Yeah, here come the crazies. Yeah, and that was Karl Rove's thing. You know, the religious right was a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
But they've gone out and won small elections for city council and state legislatures especially to get what they want. And these candidates are like Todd Akin. They're true believers.
Yep.
They're going to say and believe and vote to stop abortion in the case of rape and incest because they really believe that.
They do.
And so it's a totally different ball game. It's almost like, I mean, you've talked before, too, about riding the tiger into the stadium.
Yeah.
And thinking that you're riding the tiger when actually the tiger turns around and kills you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happened. This is mythology here.
Well, this is the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah.
This is the myth of the golem. You know, the monster. This is Frankenstein. This is the monster you create in a laboratory. In defiance of good common sense and the will of God, and you bring it to life and you give it animation and you put a crate, you know, as young Frankenstein said, you mean I put an abnormal brain in an 8-foot tall gorilla? Yes. Yes, you did. And you know who was telling you all along this is a really, really fucking bad idea?
Liberals
were telling you that. Liberals right along since Reagan, since before Reagan, since Nixon. Liberals were telling you you are weaponizing fascism. You're weaponizing bigotry. You're weaponizing religious fundamentalism, and you're turning it loose on America to win elections. And by God, one day this is going to come back to haunt you. And you know what? That day has arrived. And so when at the 11th hour, Andrew Sullivan comes knocking on my door saying, oh, can I come in? And by the way, I'd like to run the place and still keep my column and still keep my place in line and still keep my job as a columnist, even though I've been fucking wrong about everything for 30 years. My answer is no. Go to the back of the line, asshole. Sorry, David Brooks. Go to the back of the line. There's got to be a price to pay for being as wrong as you were. If you were a bricklayer, I wouldn't care. If you were a banker, I wouldn't care. You're a public intellectual, and you fucked this up for 30 years. So now you have to go do honest work for a while before you get to be another public intellectual.
The bankers get away with it, but a bricklayer that fucked up that badly wouldn't be a bricklayer for much
exactly.
longer.
Exactly.
So I have to say.
But they have – this is mythic stuff.
Yeah.
They have harnessed a dark and terrible energy they cannot control, and now it's turned on them. And I also wrote, I don't know how many years ago, the tribe of people who rub shit in their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what that look of absolute confusion that comes across Todd Akin's face is. And let me analogize it to the way good Germans talked about Jews in the 20s. It just didn't occur to anyone to censor themselves when talking about the normal activities of their daily lives. And then when some inconvenience or tragedy or national problem or economic problem came up, they say, well, of course, it's the dirty Jews. It just wouldn't occur to them that was a bad thing to say in public because everybody they knew said it. So why should they stop? Mm-hmm. Everybody these people know talks this way.
Yep.
They talk and believe me, this ain't the only shit they talk about. They talk about the secret Muslim conspiracies. They talk about how the immigrants are coming to take over and the secret plan by Democrats to turn illegal aliens into armies and voters. And they have a crackpot theory to explain every part of their lives. But thus far, they haven't taken it public because somebody, the person who harnessed the crazy, had the good sense to tell them, you really shouldn't talk about this shit outside the clubhouse because those liberals, they'll just mock you and make fun of you. Those pointy-headed elites.
Well, and it's worse than that, though. I think Todd Akin has done something really horrible nationwide to the pro-life movement. And that is with this discussion about rape and incest. And when people start thinking about what would happen if my 13-year-old daughter got raped. I mean, I know I kind of probably shocked you. I shocked myself the other night when I said,
you know,
if someone touched one of my daughters and made her pregnant, I'd want to be there at the abortion so I could take that fetus, drop it on the floor, and stomp on it. And I mean it. I mean, I would be so angry at that point that – and I'm not somebody who – I don't think any of us like abortion. Nobody likes the idea of abortion.
No one
would be there to make sure that that rapist baby didn't come into this world. Believe me. And if you said something effective, and if I could take that rapist out of the world, believe me, you'd want to hold me back to make sure I didn't do that.
Yeah, don't screw with the kids.
Right, don't touch the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that, which baby are you protecting at that point? Really, that's my point. These are my babies. These girls are my babies, and they're going to be protected.
But from
having to bear a rapist baby against their will. And that's what we're talking about. But let me finish.
Yeah, sure.
Todd Akin took away the moral high ground from the pro-life movement in this instance. The moral high ground doesn't belong to the pro-life movement when they say, we're going to force a child to carry her father's or her rapist baby because Jesus and purity myths and she must have enjoyed it and she's a slut and she's actually lying to get an abortion, all of these kind of things. It's just like killing an abortion doctor. If you really are pro-life and you want the pro-life movement to move ahead, you don't want to see anyone blow up an abortion clinic or kill an abortion doctor or even advocate that, as someone in New Hampshire did this week. Because the one thing you've got on the pro-life side is the moral high ground, and everybody knows that. But you lose it when you start talking about harming other kids for your fake mythology.
Well, and this is where women – there's a video out there somewhere of people being asked, okay, if abortion's a crime, who's the criminal?
Yeah, oh, no, we're just going to pray murder, for them. We don't want anybody to go to jail. We don't want the little girl to go to jail. Well, then you're not really serious about it. You haven't thought through
that
through. Yeah.
You're talking about the law, and the law comes with penalties. How many years behind bars should a girl serve, a young girl serve?
Well, and in parts of South America, they do. Girls do go to prison for having an abortion. Is that kind of planet you want to live on?
Well, this is where you and I will have to respectfully disagree, because I still believe that liberals keep playing to a gallery that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
We keep playing to a referee that doesn't exist. There is nobody out there saying, well, right-to-lifers have the moral high ground. Nobody thinks, I don't think they have the moral high ground at all. I think they have a moral system that they're perfectly internally consistent with. And I think that their long-term goals of the not crazy portion of let's get the number of unwanted pregnancies down to zero is perfectly laudable. But the idea that you can't draw any lines, because what they're not talking about, they're trying to reverse engineer their stupid religion into the real world, and it doesn't work. So if a zygote is a life, period, and mind you, this is a Manichaean fundamentalist way of viewing the world. Things are either true or not. They're immoral or not. They're good or evil. There's no gray areas, no middle ground. And if you start with the premise that all zygotes are lives, and are human beings, and therefore deserve the absolute protection of the law no matter what, then you must conclude that rapists, zygotes, are life, because they're born sinless, right? That the children of incest, born sinless, right? Zygotes, therefore they should be protected too. I would disagree very strongly. They have the moral high ground with themselves. I think making abortion illegal, driving Planned Parenthood out of this country so that women are dying from illegal abortions again, is profoundly immoral. I think removing agency from a woman.
You're talking about it from your own perspective. I'm talking about it from your average church-going white suburban woman.
Okay.
Who wants abortion to be legal but doesn't want an abortion clinic in her neighborhood. And there is that dichotomy of wanting it to be legal, wanting it to be available, but not really wanting to see it, and not wanting taxpayer funding for it, and all there is people have very mixed feelings. The American public keeps two distinct opinions about abortion in their heads at the same time.
Yes, we do,
and that's just the fact. So, I think that those people in general think, it would be better if there was no abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not inconsistent with wanting women to have legal access to it. But they don't seem to mind if you have to fly to Atlanta to get it. And that's the question of access is the one that's now being brought to the forefront.
Because that's a question of class.
It is a question of class. We talked about that, you know.
You said that many times. This is a question of Meghan McCain.
Yep.
Versus
the poor woman in an urban or rural area who needs access to family planning and abortion. And
yeah, she can afford it.
She can afford to fly to Norway and charter a plane. She doesn't even have to go through the airport to get to Norway to have it taken care of. And Sandy Underpants over at the Aristocrats had a good line about abortion law is for people that can't afford an airplane flight. That's who we are bossing around. And I also wanted to point out that when this whole question of forcible rape and that language was in the Ryan bill, the HR3 bill before they took it out, the reason it's forcible, the reason they wanted to talk about forcible rape being the exception is that's the woman who wasn't at a party and wasn't in the backseat of a car and hadn't had two drinks. And she was just abducted like a heroine of a 19th century novel and tied to the train tracks and ravished. And for those pure women, we're going to have this fantasy that the forcible rape is the one that is the exception, but anything else is a slut.
But of course, you can't get pregnant through a forcible rape because of the spastic tubes.
Because of the spastic tubes,
but
shut down.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that their desire to live in that fantasy world leads them to reverse engineer reality for everything from climate change to human biology to fit their stupid religion.
But that's when you realize when they start talking about forcible rape versus some other mythological thing. That's actually condemning sluts, that's what they're talking about, then that movement is no longer about pro-life at all. It's about misogyny. It's about white male capitalist power over poor women. That's what it's about. And then the moral high ground is gone. I'm going to fight for that, Driftglass, with you because I think a lot of women want to vote based on being good. I think that's how a lot of women, particularly suburban white women, they want to vote for the good candidate, the one that's better for people, better for that will make them feel good about themselves, that they did the right thing. And voting for that moral high ground candidate is why they voted for George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
That's why soccer moms voted for him, because he was the good one. And I think that when that moral high ground turns into, no, we're about power against poor women. And we're also about, you know, your daughters will not be protected if they're not forcibly raped, but just raped by their boyfriend at a party and because they had one drink too many, then, you know, they just have to live with that because zygotes are blessed events and make lemonade out of it. I mean, this is the kind of language we're hearing out loud. I think there's a moral high ground issue where women say, no, I'm not going to vote for that because that's not the good decision. That's not the moral decision.
Let me come from a different direction.
Okay.
I believe in the moral high ground. I don't believe anybody lives there. The moral high ground is supplanted by political utility. And by that, I mean, sure, you can believe that all you want. 15, 20 years ago, Bernie Goetz shooting up a subway train because he felt threatened was a national story.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have stand your ground laws. Bernie Goetz wouldn't bat an eye. Now, that incident might have caused people some outrage, but they slowly gave their rights away. 20, 30 years ago, there were family planning clinics in Kansas. Now there aren't. Planned Parenthood used to be funded by everyone. It used to be supported. People like George Bush would go to their fundraisers. Now they're not. That moral high ground is a lovely place to live, but on the ground, the terrible thing Todd Akin said today will be the normal middle ground of conversation 5 years from now if we don't push these people back into the sea.
Yep.
We have nationwide, you can look at it on a map, nationwide there are how many states were active, overt, deliberate voter suppression.
So every state in the union has had this kind of legislation introduced. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the people who are introducing it were duly elected to public office and will be reelected to public office by those good white people who just want to vote for nice people.
Todd Akin is making a shitload of money for standing his ground and pro-life. Yeah, yeah.
So all of those nice moral people will end up in 1947 trying to explain to people why they didn't stop it when they had a chance, because it all sounded so very reasonable, because it all sounded just perfectly normal. And little by little, they gave their rights away. And little by little, they voted for the person who said, but God would want you to do this, but this is the right thing to do. So sure, there's a moral high ground. But morality, a sense of self-satisfaction and morality, is being used to dupe otherwise perfectly nice people into voting for crazy people.
Yep.
And that's becoming normal. And that's why I am extremely I'm going to take the opposite of this, because those people who are being seduced year after year to voting to take people's rights away from them, to take their voting away from them, to take their social safety net away from them. You have a Republican Party now, right now, that's running on the most radical agenda I can remember.
Oh, anyway,
I mean, they're talking about getting rid of everything, getting rid of work programs, getting rid of training programs, Pell Grants, Medicaid, anything for the poor. Fuck the poor, because the poor are wretched, useless moochers, right? Yep. Nobody in their right mind would have run on a platform this radical 15 years ago, but now it's just normal. Now it's 47% of the people in this country are going to vote for this because that's what Republicans do. And it is the ability to make the atrocious normal. That is the secret power of the right.
Yep.
They just keep marching forward. And
well-funded marching. Yep.
Todd Akin sounds horrible today, but if his kind are not stopped, and I mean fucking stopped in their tracks and turned around and marched into the sea, then what he said today will be the perfectly normal centrist position 5 or 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Because that's how it works. That's how it's been working.
The center of the playing field is moving to the right all the time.
Yep.
And why does that happen? Because centrists. Because we want to compromise. And we are not going to compromise with Todd Akin. Absolutely not.
No. He has to go. And people who support him have to go.
Yep.
And if you want to, again, a quick education, the way Dana Loesch handled the fact She went through all the stages of denial, anger, denial, more denial, more anger, more denial. It's conspiracy. Finally, I just can't deal with someone who can't spin better than me.
Yeah, yeah.
But ever confirming the fact that what he said was evil.
Well, and the person who said that Todd Akin was gang raped by the media.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, I'm laughing, but really that level of denial that he said anything wrong. No, this is the media's fault. This is and the fact that he stayed in the race is the problem, not what he said. He's mm-hmm. not working toward the betterment of the party and letting us take the Senate so we can do all the things that Todd Akin says he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. So Paul Ryan said he wanted to do. And until a brighter spotlight was shown upon him, and then suddenly he couldn't remember nothing. I wasn't even there. I don't know what you're talking about. I would never say, well, maybe I said that, but I didn't really say that. And that, as one of our topics is today, the legacy cost of conservatism.
Yeah, go ahead and talk about that for a few minutes, and then
one of conservatism's
because we are short on time today, I'm afraid.
We're short on time. We gotta go. We're seeing one of the great legacy costs of conservatism for the last 40 years, and that's lying. It's now become, which is delightful to me, it's now become completely acceptable on the left to say that Mitt Romney's lying. He's a liar. He's a pathological liar. He lies more than any other president in history. He's a lying liar, liar. Al Franken's book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, was innovative in that way, was a groundbreaking in that way. And what we're seeing is a real psychotic break on a mass scale. People who are now so detached from reality that it really doesn't register with them that the guy that they're putting in office lies to them all the time about everything. And that doesn't matter to them. And that's the legacy cost, that sort of the hangover cost from the Karl Rove Lee Atwater school of how to build an electoral machine is you get all these crazy people, all these bigots, all these misogynists, all these fundamentalists under one roof. You put them in one harness and you have them haul you to the White House, and you can do it over and over and over again because they're basically fucking morons. And you just keep feeding them hate and keep feeding them conspiracy theories and keep feeding them bullshit about welfare queens and liberals and Negroes, and they'll get you to the White House every fucking time. And that's been their strategy for 40 years, but the only way you can maintain that is by constantly lying to them. And let's face it, the only group of people who are more lied to on Earth, as far as I can tell, than Republicans are North Koreans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Republicans, it's not that they believe one or two silly, crazy-ass things. They believe their entire universe is made up of lies. They lie to themselves about the president, about Kenyanism, about birtherism, about welfare, about everything you can think of. Push gently on it, and it falls apart. Which is why, and we've said this before, that the GOP has become Mayella Yule. The GOP has become that poor, ignorant, crazy woman from
To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah, Mayella.
Who is just this shrieking monster at the end but Atticus Fitch gives this wonderful speech at the end during his closing about Mayella Yule, because her world now completely depends on a lie, and it completely depends on everyone around her backing her up on it. Because if it ever comes out that what she did really was what she did, she would be cast out from society. And that is the cancer at the heart of conservatism, and it's been there for decades. They believe awful things. And rather than tell them what you believe is not true, what you believe are lies, rather than teach them like a grown-up would teach a child, like a parent would teach a child, like a pastor would teach a flock, like a professor would teach a class, rather than instruct them as to their ignorance, the right has fed their ignorance, made them dumber and meaner and angrier and more vicious and more pointed every year, because that's good fucking politics. Until you get to the point where you have a party full of shrieking right-wing imbeciles like Dana Loesch, mm-hmm. who will follow anyone waving a Confederate flag straight to hell as long as she gets her time on the air and as long as she gets her publicity and as long as you have someone to blame. So Atticus Fitch gives this lovely speech where he says, I had nothing but pity in my heart for the chief witness for the state, but my pity does not extend to her putting a man's life at stake. And this is what she's done in an effort to get rid of her guilt I say guilt because it was guilt that motivated her. She committed no crime, but she broke a rigid code of our society, a code so severe that whoever breaks it is hounded from our midst as unfit to live. She's the victim of cruel poverty and ignorance. Got it? But she knew full well the enormity of her offense, and she persisted in it. She persisted, and her subsequent reaction is something, and this is the part that is most applicable to the conservative movement in this country. Her subsequent reaction is something every child has done. She tried to put the evidence of her offense away, out of sight. What was the evidence? Not a stolen toy to be hidden. The evidence that must be destroyed is Tom Robinson, a human being. Tom Robinson, a daily reminder of what she did. And what did she do? She tempted a Negro. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She's white and she tempted a Negro, not an old uncle, but a strong young black man. No code mattered to her before she broke it, but it came crashing down on her afterwards. The existence of Barack Obama is so horrifying, is so completely alienating to this Republican Party that they have to make him go away. And they will make him go away mentally by inventing the most incredibly ludicrous fairy tales about his Kenyan background, about his secret communism, about his secret conspiracies to overthrow America, about Bill Akins, about Saul Alinsky. They will make up any fucking lie they need to tell themselves that he didn't really happen. Or if he did, it didn't really count.
You know, there's another movie that's also a really good example from the same era that mm-hmm. that points this, illustrates this kind of story, mm-hmm. and that's A Patch of Blue.
I was going to say Gone with the Wind.
No, well, A Patch of Blue with Shelley Winters and Sidney yeah. Poitier, and Selena is the blind girl. She doesn't see race. She can't see race because she's physically blind. Mm-hmm. And her aunt, I believe it is, played by Shelley Winters, you know, near the end of the movie, I won't give it all away if you haven't seen it, it's called A Patch of Blue. But this blind girl befriends Sidney Poitier in the park. And Shelley Winters plays essentially a prostitute who enables Selena to be raped. There's a lot that goes on. She's a horrible person. Shelley Winters is a wonderful actress who plays a horrible person in this movie. And there's a scene at the end, and it is a very Orly Tate's moment. Let me just put it that way, where Shelley Winters is just shrieking about Sidney Poitier. And look at him. Look at the kind of person he is. And everyone in the park is looking at her saying, mm-hmm. what are you talking about? You know, he is Barack Obama. He has class that she doesn't have.
And never will.
And she's pointing to him and saying, he's black. Don't you see that he's the enemy?
Well, and she needs to be better than him.
And she's got to be better than him, because if she's not, it's not her America anymore. She wants her country back.
Mm-hmm. Now, as long as you're doing Netflix rentals, the third one you should rent is Inherit the Wind.
Yeah, yeah. Same. Again, it's very similar themes. Yeah.
It's the we're going to make science illegal. It is a remarkably similar story of human nature. Race, not race this time, but religion this time, fundamentalist religion, where this real town, fictionalized in the movie, but the fictional characters are played by Spencer Tracy, who's really playing Clarence Darrow, and Frederick March, who's really playing William Jennings Bryant, and Gene Kelly, who is really playing H.L. Mencken. Mm-hmm. And it's this sweaty courtroom drama where the law says you can't teach evolution. It's against the law. And every time Clarence Darrow tries to bring a scientist to the stand, the judge says, no, you can't do that because it's the law. And so you can't put him up there because we're not discussing correctness or falsity of the law. We're just discussing whether or not your client broke it. Well, it's an unjust law. And Clarence Darrow desperately wants to put the law itself on trial. And the very ignorant, fundamentalist, frightened people of the town don't want to have.
And the elected judge. who depends on the goodwill of the people.
Doesn't want to hear about
people. Doesn't want to deal with that. Yeah.
So he now everything's disallowed. So you end up with nothing but Spencer Tracy and Frederick March squaring off because Spencer Tracy finally says, fine, can I put basically William Jennings Bryan on the stand and cross-examine him as an expert in religion? But it's this contest, and there's this there are many lovely speeches in it, but there's a lovely speech about everything costs. Progress costs. That you want the telephone? Fine. But you lose the charm of distance and privacy. And ladies, you want the vote? That's great. You got the vote, but you can't hide behind your petticoats anymore and pretend this has nothing to do with you. If you want to fly, that's great. But he says something about the birds will lose their charm and the clouds will smell of gasoline. And evolution means you have to give up the pretty poetry of Genesis. You have to. You can't have both. And the Republican Party has gathered unto itself all those people who are terrified of that future and told them they don't have to give up the pretty poetry of fundamentalism, that they can believe the literal and inerrant word of God, and all they have to do is obey and hear your enemies and strike them down. And here are the people you can trust, and you should vote for them, and you should give them your money and give them your trust. And it's a tragedy because they're being played for fools.
Yeah, and also they're being untrue to their own faith. I mean, that's where I have been able to build a bridge with people of faith that I'm able to talk to about these things. The idea of biblical idolatry. And that you're going to hold up this book that you don't obey every word of anyway. I mean, no one obeys the entire book of Leviticus ever. You know, even observant Jews don't. And this idea that you're going to hold up this book as the inerrant word of God, but you don't believe several books of it. And but you're holding it up and it's the golden calf. The book is the golden calf. And what an interesting way to be fooled into believing in idolatry is the religion itself has this thing that is your guide, and therefore you're going to hold this up as being the idol instead of worshiping God. And as I've been able to talk to people at church about this, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. If you hold up the book as the only thing that you're supposed to worship, well, what about talking about Jesus? What about talking about God? What about, all of these other things? If the Bible gets in the way of that, your religion is a joke. And it's time to turn around fundamentalism for what it is, which is an idolatry of the Bible.
And the peril of lying, especially in religion, especially when you're lying about your immortal soul.
Well, apparently you're allowed to lie for Jesus in certain faiths, including certain branches of Mormonism. It's okay to lie for Jesus. So I find really, all right.
I'm not going to give the whole quote because that would be a waste of your time, but I know there's a quote in Ayn Rand, I know there is, about the perils of lying, because once you tell someone a lie, you give them control of your life. And once you pulled Karl Rove aside and said, just help me out here, bud. Just get written that I believe a whole bunch of crazy shit, but I'll give you my vote. If you just keep mouthing, if you just keep pretending, if you just give me political power, I'll give my vote in return. Once you've made that pact with the devil, they control your life.
Yep.
Because they can shut it right off. They can turn it right around and say, yeah, but Bobo over here is a moron. Do you know what this asshole believes? Yeah, he told me in confidence, but fuck that. He told me he believes in fairies. He believes in pixies. Mm-hmm. And this is gay rights. Yep. It comes into economics, because economics is about who is morally worth saving, who is morally upright, and who is not, because poor people are, according to prosperity doctrine and according to the false religion of randitism, people are poor because they're immoral. People are virtuous because they're rich, or rich because they're virtuous. So this whole discussion, this whole election has been a discussion of values. And it keeps manifesting itself in interesting ways, but it's all a values discussion. And it's all a really weird values discussion, because Republicans absolutely do not want to talk about what they really believe, because what they really believe is horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, no, not in the clubhouse. The idea that Todd Akin is ashamed of believing that women should bear the children of the rapist, that's something he'd be ashamed of. He's not ashamed to talk to his family about that.
No.
He's not ashamed to talk about that in his church, but he knows he should have known better. That was Dana Loesch's
critique. Coulter,
he should have known better.
I officially hate him now because he spun it wrong and he's destroying our chance to take back the Senate. And
because
that's
he talked about our private shit in public.
Yeah.
And you're never supposed to do that because our private shit is crazy and it's lurid and it's evil. Anyway, on that happy note.
Dana and Ann Coulter's birth control. Never mind.
On that happy note.
I want to give an award to USA Today this week for the absolute worst headline ever all week long.
So very on point, baby. Very on point. Yeah.
USA Today's headline on Wednesday was "Social Issues Intrude on GOP Convention." It's such an intrusion. We were going to have crumpets, and we were intruded upon by the abortion issue.
Yeah. Them barbarians.
Man.
Them savages. They intrude on our little cotillion. No. All you run on are social issues.
So that's it. Yeah. I just found that.
That was hilarious.
Just
I gotta
so
say.
Enabling. Just absolutely, you know. Oh, what we really want to talk about is the economy and Mitt Romney's rich personal life. I can't wait for that. I can't wait to hear the Mitt Romney story since we have to leave out that he was governor. We have to leave out all the Bain stuff. We have to leave out all the financial success because apparently tax returns, you're not allowed to talk about that. That's going to lead to that. And so we're going to talk about, I guess, his lovely wife and great kids.
Well, yeah. And
we can't talk about his faith.
I have a great deal of respect for what money can buy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're buying themselves a rich and lovely pageant that will explain Mitt Romney's heroic personal rise, his great Christian American values, his family's long trek up from poverty. It'll be a wonderful, heroic, all-American story. He'll bring all 800 of his kids on stage. They're all white. They're all attractive.
And then they will sing the party anthem. You've come a long way, baby, to get what you've got to today.
Don't do that to me, Blue Al. I have a delicate constitution.
Oh. You've got
all right.
Romney Ryan now, baby. You've come a long, long way. All right. And the biggest lie of the year. We have to end on the biggest lie. I predict this is the lie of the year.
Uh-huh.
You know, death panels was the lie of the year.
Yeah.
In 2011. And the lie of the year is from Paul Ryan. Nobody's trying to take away anybody's birth control.
Yeah.
Happy Sununu Week, by the way.
Thank you. Happy Sununu Week to you, too.
We love our listeners. Thank you so much for listening and for all your support. You can listen to us for free at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. We're at our Facebook page, and I'm Frances Langham on Facebook. We're on iTunes and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store. We're on Stitcher Radio and on Netroots Radio from 6 to 7 Pacific, 9 to 10 Eastern at netrootsradio.blogspot.com. And also, I understand, from 1 to 2 a.m. Pacific Time. On Saturday nights. Thank you so much for your contributions to our podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at our P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. We have an email address, and we love hearing from you. Please feel free to write us at any time. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. All of this information is at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, or you can just Google Professional Left and find out all about us. Every week, we publish a picture of an internet kitty at our website and at our Facebook page. But this week, we have two internet kitties, and they are
two?
Two. They're from Japan, and their names are Zatoichi. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Zatoichi and Hiroko.
May I take a crack at them?
Sure.
Zatoichi and Hiroku.
Ah, very good.
And whoever their owners are, I know who you are, Andrew. let us know who wins, okay?
Yeah. I'm sure you did it right. But Andrew is a dedicated podcast listener, and he sent us this wonderful picture of his two internet kitties, and they're big and being held by him, and they're just terrific. Lots of fur over there in Japan, I must say. And we certainly appreciate those two kitties from Japan. If you would like to send us a picture of your internet kitty, feel free to do so at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Please put at the subject line of your email, internet kitty, so we know that that's what that is and it doesn't get lost. Feel free to write us, and be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties want to wish each and every one of our listeners a happy John Sununu week.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.